Within 8 minutes, he did our event, launched his book, and opened Catch Steak. And I turn around, Michael Jordan comes to hug him. He's like, oh, I'm launching this guy's tequila in the room over here. I was like, you did that all in 15 minutes. I said, now I understand how a guy like you has amassed $10 billion. You learned how to compress time.
Kamal Hachandani, the founder and CEO of Hope Media Group, the conglomerate of luxury businesses spanning media, real estate, yachts, jets, experiences, and so much more.
I was always fascinated with the manifestation of the American dream, seeing that how if you could visualize, put your mind and execute something.
What was the business vision?
I looked at ourselves as wanting to be the Rolls Royce of media, but then I understood the power of celebrity and social media.
What have you learned about success?
We would sit with this billionaires and I realized everyone's answer had one commonality. Time is the ultimate luxury. The real happiness is in love and family.
What was that meeting with Richard Branson like, and what did you learn from him? What is up, guys? Welcome back to the World Class Podcast. Today, I sit down with Kamal Hachandani. He is the founder and CEO of Hope Media Group, which is a conglomerate of luxury businesses spanning yachts, jets, real estate, events, media, and so much more. And in this conversation, we break down how Kamal built this business empire. And we talk about how he landed the biggest sponsorships with brands like Rolls-Royce, Louis XIII, how he partnered with the biggest celebrities like Alicia Keys and Carmelo Anthony, and how he really built this conglomerate of companies. We talk about how to build an iconic brand. We talk about how to build a world-class network. And he shares some really thoughtful pieces of advice on how to live a happier, more successful and fulfilling life. So without further ado, let's dive in. Kamal, welcome. Welcome to the show, man.
Super excited. Thank you, and humbled and honored to be here.
Yeah. And like I was mentioning to you off camera recently, like I think of you as the Richard Branson of Miami. You have built a remarkable empire across so many different businesses that all kind of feed into each other. You've got the media group, you've got the jets, the yachts, the real estate company. You're just doing so many things, and it just seems like you're living the dream, man. And I know it was not easy to get here. So I want to dive in and figure out how you built this so we can take some nuggets away from this. But can you take me back to start off? Like, what was the moment you had this vision for Hot Media, and what did it look like?
I'd say you had actually even started much before that. Even as a kid, I was always fascinated with the manifestation of the American dream. And seeing that how if you could visualize, put your mind and execute something, you could take things to levels after levels. And coming here as an immigrant at 9, ending up in New York, I quickly had a passion for the American dream and was looking to see what steps I would need to do that. And in getting into the media game, I was first out of college, got into the IT game. I was in the early IT outsourcing, caught a wave, and got myself the resources to create a platform that in my eyes would bring real relationships to me. And when I initially started, I was going after self-made billionaires, self-made entrepreneurs, people that created something out of nothing. Sitting down with a Richard Branson at an early age in my career was actually a huge inspiration for me, and seeing how you could build a foundation, the trust of a brand, and then replicate that across other verticals. So it was just a good honor and fortune to be able to do that. And segued with the advent of social media, I realized we did a story in 2012 on Tyra Banks, and she tweeted it to 12 million people, and I saw the traffic go out the roof. And I sort of changed my lens from self-made entrepreneurs, which I believe these majority of the celebrities are now, come from humble beginnings and that, and ended up shifting our editorial strategy based on social media, but still always honoring the pursuit of the American dream.
That's very, so you knew you wanted to make it big in America and be this example of what's possible for people. Why'd you choose media?
I thought it was a great way of learning. And in media specifically, I positioned ourselves as a good news network because we've never published anything negative. And I know I would have made a lot more and created a lot more traffic as what you look at how TMZ writes about breakups and divorces.
Yeah,
we would write about how someone created something out of nothing, built this empire, and how they give back. So I feel that our overall strategy in going and living a life based on gratitude, this media platform gave me the ability of learning, but also giving back to organizations by us bringing brand partnerships to us just connecting the dots with the right types of entrepreneurs in the right types of situations.
What was the like business model in mind when you had, you're like, okay, we're going to build a media company. We're going to put out amazing content. We're going to feature amazing entrepreneurs and put out good news into the world. What was like the business vision behind that at first?
So I really went for the niche of targeting the ultra high net worth, highly successful entrepreneurs and the world that comes with that, which led to the luxury world. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, you know, sort of the Dom Perignon budgets were much more smaller than a Red Bull budget.
Yeah.
But the impact of what we were doing with the people on top of the pyramid that these brands were interacting with and sort of connecting the end users with these brands was a part of the motivation. And I was always passionate about the luxury space.
Yeah.
I like attention to detail. I know time is our greatest asset, and I see in certain of these brand heritages and product. So I had a passion for that space and wanted to align with the audience that were in that space. So mm-hmm. wanted to build a community and maintain the trust and integrity of that community to where we could go to other products and launch and have success by doing that.
So what did it look like at first? Because at first you don't have a brand, you don't have the trust yet, but you're putting out media. Was that kind of like the first domino? You're like, hey, let's build a media platform, build up an audience. Then off the back of that, we can start figuring out like aligned services and products that we could launch off the back of that.
Yeah. So fundamentally, initially, when I was thinking about the brand, I was looking at how can I get acceptance in the luxury space fastest? And I said, look, I looked at ourselves as wanting to be the Rolls Royce of media. So I reached out to a contact. I got in touch with someone in Germany. BMW bought Rolls Royce at the time. And I said, I knew that just having my logo next to Rolls Royce on one of our first invitations would create the perception of us being an older brand and not just a startup with a kid in Miami. So by aligning myself with brands that had huge brand heritage, Louis XIII, 17 generations of families passed that business through, and they gave us the trust. And by consistently aligning with these brands, and specifically Rolls-Royce, I looked at a testimonial from, I believe it was 08, and then the CEO wrote one in 2020 that, you know, continued partnership of us, they've been getting great results. And an eye-opening thing is, I want to ask you, so what do you think the average user of a Mini Cooper is?
A Mini Cooper, I'm going to say a 45-year-old mom.
And for an average Rolls-Royce customer?
I'm going to say 50-plus male.
And a BMW?
I'm going to go high 30s across.
So BMW owns all three of those brands. The youngest audience is 42 with a Rolls Royce owner.
Okay.
53 is the Mini Cooper owner and 46 for a BMW owner. And I mentioned this because we were doing a series of Rolls Royce activations and I spoke at the global dealer meeting and they were showing how it skewed younger. And it said, thanks to some of the work you do by bringing us NBA players. They put on a slide of Anthony Davis with four Cullinans, Kylie Jenner with six of them. So it skewed much younger, smaller production. And then understanding these things, I start connecting the dots of the athletes with the brands and so forth. So those part of the genesis of the evolution of the business model.
That's so interesting. How do you get a brand? This is really valuable for like early founders that haven't received a ton of traction yet. How did you get brands like Rolls-Royce to partner with you? What value were you promising them?
So what was crazy, I reached a lady kind of cold calling and she kind of liked my hustle on the phone. And she told me, hey, I'll give you $2,500 to do an event. And I said, that's the price of the step and repeat. Like,
yeah.
But then I said, let me be creative. And the Mandarin in New York was opening at the time. So I got them. I said, we'll do an editorial on your presidential suite. And I moderated a real estate discussion of numerous billionaire tycoon real estate developers. And I brought in an editor from the New York Post to give some credibility to us.
Yeah.
Got the suite for free, got the luncheon and paid the photographers out of the $2,500. And two real estate people bought two Rolls Royces. So they were $700,000 sale based on that. And then the lady said, you know what? That was clever how you got in, got the space for the Mandarin penthouse. I got Dom Perignon to provide the product and created a partnership with them since then. And that was really my first New York event. And I was able to have the Rolls-Royce badge on our invitation, sell some cars. The CEO of Corcoran Group, I still remember, she took one. And it just led to, they said, oh, wow, we got an amazing ROI. And now we could go from 2,500 to 25,000, then to 50,000. And then it just went to, you know, to six figures, and it continued growing with the activation. So
that's so impressive. I think that's a really powerful concept too. When you're young, you're coming up, the power of co-branding, right? Like, you borrow the authority of different brands, you find aligned ways to partner with them, and they kind of prop you up, and you're in the same ecosystem as those people now. And then you can add more and more value, the more attention that you are able to drive through your platform, and you can create more partnerships. It's super interesting, but I'm like, everyone dreams of building the kind of network that you've built, because you're able to work with the, you know, most prolific NBA players, the biggest brands like Rolls Royce and Louis XIII, and you're able to create those connections, right? And like, create real tangible value. Like, how did you go about approaching building your network, like, of professional athletes and all these people that you could eventually end up plugging into these brand deals?
You know what I feel it came down to is consistency and authenticity.
Yeah.
And it was cool because there's a coach, Patrick, he was Serena Williams's coach.
Okay.
And we connected briefly once, and we connected on Instagram, and then he invited me out to dinner, and he said, I wanted to talk to you about this charity event I'm doing, this, that. He goes, but the thing I respect, he's like, I saw the work you did with Alicia Keys 10 years ago, and now we're 10 years later, and I still see her posting and you posting, that you're able to maintain these relationships, you know, throughout time. And it wasn't a one and done that, oh, you met this person. So I feel that the more consistency you have with this specific audience that has millions of people bombarding them for their attention and stuff. And for me, just ended up becoming where I ended up becoming a magnet to them, where I have requests coming in from some of the most, you know, high profile names. I said, did that person really just text me looking for this? I said, oh, it's funny when you come and think about, hey, I couldn't even get into a Heat game when I came here.
You couldn't even get in the bleachers.
Yeah,
so and like, now you're sitting on the floor.
This, and I got, you know, Jimmy Butler looking for this. And I said, oh, I just got a text from this person. And you develop the friendships. And I feel that in this space too, the referral network becomes more powerful. Because if they know that, say, you did this for this person, has access to all these resources and all these people doing that, and you do it consistently for them, I feel like that leads to opening more and more doors within that community specifically too.
Starts to compound.
Yeah,
you built the trust, built the relationship. You had a run-in with Richard Branson, you mentioned, right? And it was pretty influential in your inflection point of how you saw your vision for what was possible for yourself, right? What was that meeting with Richard Branson like, and what did you learn from him?
It was amazing just seeing, and it's funny, it was the first cover I remember ever shooting with a person in a sling because he had injured his arm. And just seeing how he was passionate and how he had taken the community and the trust of his brand and maintained the integrity of his brand and brought it to other verticals, but was innovative in how he approached, whether it was cruise shipping, aviation, just simple things from lighting, experience. And I was like, wow, you could go in and build a life and a real strategy of each one of these products. And then I sat with the Cipriani family, and I saw what the father did. And when the Cipriani Soho opened, they called it Downtown by Sea. So the father would never want to give the Cipriani name until you earned it. So the grandfather said, okay, and then Downtown by Sea became hot. It became Cipriani. And then the next generation, Giuseppe, did that to his son, saying, you know what, you're going to start a brand in LA more for working professionals, Mr. C. If that Mr. C graduates, then it could end up becoming a Cipriani. So when we were doing this, and even with the real estate, I went with HL Real Estate Group. I used a sort of an acronym of what we do. I didn't want it to seem as a competitor to all of my real estate advertisers. But then now it's grown where I said, hey, if we hit 100 million a year in sales, then we hit this amount and we do that. I'd use the Hope brand with that, and sat down with every advertiser and explained to them how it's complementary. And now we're closing deals with our advertisers, and the whole nature of the relationships changed from media buy to, hey, we'd rather take 50 times more in the commissions and be partners and everyone sharing.
Yeah.
And that, so the whole sort of our business model changed in that sense, right? So we weren't chasing the ad agencies and doing that, and they're calling us. I was like, hey, how come you're not calling?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, we sold all the penthouses of the places. We marketed. I would bring Troy Aikman for a Super Bowl dinner at 57 Ocean. They would pay us a fee. We would host, do this events. Great. But then I sold a penthouse there through our network for 40-something million. I said, wow, and they're paying you 5 to 6% on these new developments. I did the same thing at the Zaha Hadid, sold a penthouse. We did the groundbreaking parties.
Yeah.
And I realized the economics was much bigger on taking the transactions and the marketing. And then I realized it's better if we could do both. You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of how, you know, that part evolved and how I sort of drew inspiration from the people I was interviewing or meeting.
It's fascinating. I'm curious, especially with Richard, I think he's built this conglomerate of companies and he has like a system, right? You've done the media company, you've done jets, you're doing real estate. You're doing a bunch of experiences and activations with brands. Like how the hell do you do it all? Right? Like, I know it's about having the right people in place, but like, what's the right sequence? Like, how did you think through, you know, we take this business to this level, then we branch off, we hire a CEO for this company. You're like, what's the blueprint for being able to build all these companies in parallel?
Well, I'll tell you what was crazy. Some of it is, you said, like good fortune and good luck. And some of you get pushed and pulled into it. And I was getting calls at like midnight, 1 a.m. consistently from DJ Khaled. And he was like, you know, my brother, and he was taking a bus from Miami to LA for 13 years straight. Like he wouldn't get on a plane. And he was starting to blow up and we started shooting some content with him. And he's like, my bus broke down and I can't open for Beyonce. And I said, that's crazy. I said, like, what bus? Like everybody's flying to the shows. And he was in St. Louis. And I'm like, I'm in New York. And he said, well, what do you suggest? I said, honestly, I would call Tony Robbins. You go on stage with him. You have some relation. He has a global 5,000. He said, no, I need you to coach me through this. And when his son was born, I got a jet for his son and I flew him. I said, look, if you can put your son on the plane, you got to get on the plane. And I coached him through it. We did the first flight. I handed him over to jet clients of ours, but he kept on coming back. And he said, now I need to fast forward. This was 2017. Last year, I said, I haven't flown over water. And I said, well, you're in the air. It's you know, the same liability thing, right? Is the same. And I got him an Airbus to fly to Saudi Arabia, a special Airbus that he had the royal. He had 10 people looking, but no one could find it. And Airbus Corporate Jets happens to be my client. And I was able to source the plane he would need to overcome his fear. Then I knew the client. I had the other side, but there was $250,000 to be made. And one guy made the majority of it. And I said, no, if I get set up, do this on my own, I have both sides of the business. I have the celebrity clientele calling me, even though they have VistaJet memberships, they have this, and this. They wanted sort of the experience that I could bring to them and just sort of how I handle our business. And I was like, okay, you know, this makes sense. And then we start bringing on more brokers. And because we can integrate when someone lands at the Super Bowl and we do the Rolls Royce Super Bowl event, not only you're chartering, mm-hmm. you're getting access to the experiential. So more and more of the business pieces are tying in. We just had someone fly in and buy real estate through us. So they chartered a plane, went to our Bentley Residences event, put the money down there. And so the more and more of the integration that we could do within that community of people that are going to buy a $10 million home, it's a limited audience, you know, as you know.
Yeah.
So if we could really continue building and giving them the best solutions in the aviation, in experiential, and it led to a point where we have brands such as Chanel hiring us to help curate audiences, right? And one of our great feelings that I had was we got hired, typically as a traditional media now, by LVMH, and they start taking our work and putting it on 50 million Dior followers on their page, on the Dior global page, work by us, and on Fendi's page, so 30 million. And I was like, wow, from where we started and the biggest luxury groups in the world are actually taking our work of, you know, a team of 30 and putting it out there. So it was a great feeling to see, you know, what our team has been able to accomplish and the respect that we're getting from the brands.
Dude, that's really fascinating because there's really two sides to this, right? You have all the different business partnerships with the jet companies, with the hotels, with the restaurants, with these cool experiences. And then you have the high-end clientele that wants to live this lifestyle, but you find a way to integrate it all, right? What's the full 360 degrees, everything this person could possibly want in their life? But I think what's cool too, And I think why you are where you're at is the authenticity, right? Just actually giving a shit about people, actually wanting to help them and going above and beyond to do whatever the hell you can. I think like a lot of people are just thinking so transactionally about, hey, how can I help this person in terms of my skill set and my business service? But when you can be their coach, their mentor, their friend when shit hits the fan, like you, that's how you build a real reputation of like just being a good freaking human. And I think those people just start gravitating.
Yeah, and I feel like the consistency, as I mentioned, the more you do that and they lead to, you know, other opportunities. And so it's just, I consider it a blessing, and I love preaching living a life based on gratitude, just because you see how things are in other parts of the world and how crazy things are and how fortunate we are to be able to live, you know, where we live, how we live and what we get to experience. So it's like that to me, just having that as deep rooted makes it even that much more fun too.
I think that's legitimately the secret to life, is just being grateful for everything. I got to be honest though, man, it's tough sometimes, right? Like I'll forget that I feel like I live the dream. Like I think at some point you realize, you wake up, you're like, wait, I'm living the dream that I had my whole life, but I'm so focused on the future and building that I just forget that I'm here. And it's still like this sense of lack and this eagerness to get somewhere else. Do you ever struggle with that? Or I'm curious, like, how do you anchor in gratitude when you have fires left and right in your business, when you got deals falling through, you got, you know, problems everywhere. And the bigger the business you build, the more of them that come, right? How do you stay grateful?
You know, I think if, as long as you take a step back and understand that's all addressable. And then for me on the flip side, there's just so many magic moments and experiences that I have. The fact that next week I get to work with Robert De Niro and I get to work with people, as a kid, I would say, oh, wow, I love The Godfather, and I get to go and sit now and do that. Like, it's so many pinch me moments back to back to back aggregated. You're just living a life of blessings, right? So I think from that perspective, you know, you can't, you're just blessed to have all the blessings, you know?
But I have a feeling too that your grateful personality before you had all that is probably what attracted all of it. Like when you were early days starting out and you didn't have the success yet, and you're just in the thick of the mud, right? Just trying to get shit going. Did you still feel like you had that same mentality? Or?
You know, I feel like my mom and dad kind of always raised us with that culture. And then if you coming from India and just being in the third world and coming and seeing the amazing luxuries that you could have here, you just, I feel like, tend to appreciate it because you're not necessarily born with it as something that's normal to you.
Yeah.
So even being in a country where as a kid you'd have to get water from a vat, heat it up, and then saying, oh, I'm on a G650ER going to Monaco. I said, and there's a wide range of what you've experienced and what, you know, from both ends of the spectrum. And I think that I enjoy even the simplest moments of that childhood stuff there as much as some of the moments now. And I even feel that it's, I tell people it's kind of crazy to get desensitized to things. Like you went to the Super Bowl a few times, but then you actually enjoy it being at home with your nephews and that, watching it on TV in a comfortable space, right?
Yeah.
So you definitely want to go out there, achieve it, go and do that. But I go back to some of the most simplest things. And I always joke with my dad, because in Belize, with the currency exchange, a meal was like $3. And I said, that was my favorite meal. And then we would go to a place where you go and see a dish that's like a fish for like $300. You're like, it's unheard of. And if you convert it to the currency locally, like no one's paying $1,000 for a fish, right? And I said, but the simplest things, as you go and experience all these things, I think kind of brings you back, you know, to the staying grounded with your roots too. So
yeah, that's a great point, man. Did you, when you were starting out, because you're not playing in like a, you know, just a standard business place. Like you're playing in a space with the biggest celebrities and stars in the world. Like when you were just starting out, were you like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like massive imposter syndrome? Or did you just have this crazy self-belief and just know you deserve to be in those rooms?
You know, it's like when people talk about energy and, you know, you could feel it. And I was like, I would interact with certain people. I said, wow, I know I'm dealing with greatness right now. And I would say, wow, it's such an honor and blessing to be able to do that. And then you get aggregate more and more of these moments together and you get more comfortable and said, wow. Because literally sometimes you go in and you would see, like I met President Trump before he was a president and it was an almost controversial. And
yeah,
I remember we went to go do a photo shoot and he's like, you have 5 minutes. And I said, 5 minutes. And he was so efficient in how everything got done. The family came in, this, that. I said, wow. So I would see certain examples of these entrepreneurs of how they were compressing time and doing that and just trying to learn as much from that and apply it to like life, and then it becomes like a lesson. So it was just not intimidating. It was like reverted back to like a blessing. Oh, I went and I ran into this situation, and there's a guy who I just worked with, Tillman Fertitta.
Yeah.
So I was, I told him, we just were on his yacht Boardwalk, and he was supposed to get wiped out in the pandemic. Every restaurant's closed. And
he owned what, like thousands of restaurants?
5,000 restaurants. And we did an event, and I thought it was like, oh, I'm doing this event with Tillman. And he walks into our event. We're at the opening of Catch Steak. I said, oh, there's going to be a great crowd. He comes in. We're partnered with Louis XIII. And the way in 5 minutes he made that room feel, I said, I've never seen anyone do that. And he even told the Louis guy, goes, when they break into my restaurant, before they steal the cash register, they steal the bottle of Louis. That's how great your product is. He worked the room. And he said, oh, this is your media company? Come with me. And we walked down. And I said, oh, I thought this was the event. He starts signing books. He had a book signing party going on simultaneously. And I turn around. Michael Jordan comes to hug him. He's like, oh, I'm launching this guy's tequila in the room over here. So within like 8 minutes, he did our event, launched his book and Cinco Oro Tequila and opened Catch Steak. I was like, you did that all in 15 minutes. I said, I can now understand how a guy like you has amassed $10 billion. So now with the opening of Catch, you know, we did some work with them, and we're going to be doing stuff closer when the roof opens and stuff like that. But I was like, you learn from these guys how to compress time and how they're doing this. And then that's how they reach that level. And I figured like the more I met with them, I was learning, and like, just, I feel like the aura rubs off too. Like you're learning.
It really does. I feel like the best lessons in life are caught, not taught.
Yeah.
You learn them from observing people, but you have to be in proximity. Once you're in the room and you could just observe how they move and operate, you're like, taking notes there. Like that's, I got to start applying that.
Yeah, I was
like this guy just got more done in 15 minutes than I did this last month. Yeah, like I got to change some shit up. And I think you've been in a unique spot too, because you've seen, you know, athletes, musicians, top entrepreneurs, billionaires, all that. So you have, I think there's patterns of greatness and things you kind of learn. I'm curious if you have any more of those, because I think the time compression is really big.
I'll tell you another impressive guy I met was the owner of the Golden State Warriors, Joe Lacob. He was another guy. Like I met him in Summer League in Vegas for a breakfast, and he said, you know, I like you. You're going to come spend a day with me. And I said, the way this guy was moving from, you know, Summer League, they're scouting players, recruiting players. I mean, it was just this guy. I said he had a specific magic to him. And at first he was like, I don't even want too much press. I'm just going to do a feature. And then he got comfortable, and then he took me into Brioni, and I was just watching how this guy moves. And I was like, this guy's a real legend. But he's had such humble beginnings and then he was like counting cards, and he just figured it out. And I just watched how these guys, then he became Kleiner Perkins partner and then bought a team, you know? So I was just honored to see how quick they could, you know, move everything. So.
Yeah. What do you think of the, you know, there's the greats, there's like the greater than great, and there's the goats, right? Like literally the people that are running the world, right? The most generational defining companies. Like, what do you think are the key attributes that those people have to operate at that level?
I mean, there's definitely a gift. You know, I look at, you know, we're talking about some of the tech people here, like even David Steinberg, and I see some of these guys and Michael Milken, that Milken for me is like, he's operates on a whole nother level. Like if you see what he's doing, and it comes to a point where it's about changing humanity, not changing like even businesses and stuff. So what he's doing with prostate cancer, funding research. So I feel, and I don't know if you've had the pleasure of attending any of the Milken events, but what he does on the Milken Global Initiatives and the stuff he does between here and Palm Beach. So I look at him as a perfect example that the consistency and greatness and focus that led him to where he is has now given him the position to change medicine, to change how long people lives and how many billions he's been able to divert back. And I look at that as sort of the ultimate GOAT, where humanity is being shifted based on your actions, not just your personal life or even giving back to this specific charity or that.
Right.
Like overall,
right.
This guy's like moving, like, you know, for the world to be a better place longer.
So inspiring. I think a lot of greatness, it's really how you deal with adversity, right? It's like no one gets there without going through the mud, right? And it's like your mental models, how you respond to adversity. And I'm always curious about those moments. Like, was there, when you're building Hot, any of these companies, was there like any like, oh shit moments we might die? Like what was the most insane, difficult moment in building these companies?
I would say like crises. Like when we started, there was a huge financial crisis and say, hey, how is this going to work? And then even looking at the pandemic, we took a bigger space, Super Bowl in Miami, rolling out events, the world shuts down. Oh, we're not going to have experiential. We're not going to have this. Pivoted and saying, hey, instead of marketing the real estate, let's capture this gold rush, sell the real estate. The private aviation goes off the chain. Just being able to react and say, hey, this was thrown at me and there aren't going to be events. And one of the things that helped us when the world shut down, I went immediately and I said, hey, we lost 100 events. Let's be the first ones to plan 200 Zooms. So I reached out to Jimmy Butler, to Ludacris. I did the CEO of Sotheby's Real Estate because every realtor was stuck at home. So through our real estate platform, I'd say, hey, what do you think the future? What strategies? Then people are stuck at home. I'd say, hey, Ludacris and Louis XIII, he was very passionate about the brand. Let's go on an IG Live and just create content while people are at home freaked out by what Fauci is saying, by what this one's doing. Yeah. And then people start reaching out. So I said, thank you for doing this because I'm a realtor. I have nothing. And then everything started booming, right? Down here. And then the rest of the country was how to adapt because we worked with LVMH and they said, look, Toronto, they got screwed. Like they were locked down the longest and their boutiques weren't able to open for 6 months after stuff here. And they said, clients are complaining that you're throwing these parties and we're seeing. So it was even navigating outside of home court, you know, through the social filter of understanding, but being reactive and pivoting, you know, helped us, you know, sort of 10X the business too. And I sat with Tony Robbins during the pandemic. And that's one of the things is that how would you have 10X your business in this? And I said, look, going to similar your blueprint, he went and built a studio next to his home in Palm Beach.
Yeah.
And instead of doing 17,000 people, he was getting 120,000 people at the same price.
Yeah.
And he said, I literally 10X'd my business doing that. And I said, that's, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, so I would say like being reactive and pivoting to the right solution, you know, adapting, I should say, more than, you know, to what's out there.
Dude, I think that is like the make or break of people. You know, like I remember I launched my business during COVID, like 2 months before it kicked off, and I run a recruiting business, right? Everything froze. There was no one hiring anybody. And I was focused in San Diego, only San Diego businesses. And I was like, well, there's still capital flowing, but it's not in San Diego. San Diego's plan, they're in the fetal position right now, right? I was like, Silicon Valley, had no connections. I already moved from there, so I wasn't gonna move back. But I was like, all right, well, we can do remote stuff now. I gotta go make connections in Silicon Valley. And I was like, I gotta get in front of as many people as I can. So I built a AI marketing system to do tons of outreach for me, and built a network in Silicon Valley, and then built a global firm off of that. But that crisis where I was like, oh shit, I might lose my business now, turned into, okay, how do I need to adapt? I gotta learn marketing. I've gotta target a new, you know, subset of customers. And then that ended up turning into a monster success, right? But if that didn't happen, most people went in their rooms and started playing video games and like, well, we'll wait for a year and wait for the market to get back, right? You're like, no, I think when you're a winner, when you have that right mindset, like you want those crises because you know that's where the gold is, but you got to look for it.
100%.
Yeah. I love it, man. A few quick questions for people that are trying to build brands, right? Like, I think you've done a great job, man. Like all the content I've seen about, is it hot or hot?
It's been anglicized. I mean, it's oat is the proper pronunciation. And you know, a lot of my friends in hip hop and stuff, you know,
they're like hot media.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing.
Okay. I'll go proper hoat. Yeah. But like, you know, in building hoat, I think building a really cohesive brand is hard, man. Like, obviously it's the people you're engaging with and interacting with, like they influence that brand. But like for people that want to build incredible brands that are durable, enduring, and that have, you know, that really resonate with people, like what are some of the must-have principles that they should think through when building a brand?
So for me, specifically to our area, as I prior reference to me, I looked at what I wanted to emulate and what had sort of had historical value. And Rolls-Royce was a company that the relentless pursuit of excellence is something that I was looking at. And I found that that company represented that. And so I did the steps of trying to align with that to kind of create a acceleration or shortcut on that. Mm-hmm. And another way specifically applicable to our business, how I helped build our brand, was I created the trust and the respect and appreciation of our brand, where every week I have a different celebrity taking our brand and posting it on all their social platforms. So I have something coming up with Kevin Hart, for example. He has 80 million people. And if we have that consistency of getting that third party trust of high value going out there and pushing your brand, people are like, oh, wow. So Alicia Keys trusted this guy with this, or this one trusted them. There's right. a perception in that. So I'm speaking specifically for our business, right? So I wanted to build a Rolls Royce of media, but then I understood the power of celebrity and social media. So I was said to our team, anyone we feature, they need to give us a time to create the content. They have to put us on all of their social platforms, and then they have to give us 90 minutes minimum for experiential, right? And we've been able to do this without paying for that based on the trust of our brand.
So you don't pay those guys anything, but trust that your platform has merit, it has high integrity, they want to be associated with the brand. So they're like, hey, if you give me some great content, give me a feature, because you're in such a prestigious positioning, they're like, hey, we'll post it for free. And that just multiplies your guys's.
And that's just happening every week. So it's like this actor, this one, and then a rarity comes, like a Robert De Niro, where he doesn't have social media. But what we did a collaborative post with at Tribeca, which is a Tribeca Film Festival, and they just had De Niro Con, and we're doing his wrap up and celebration of that. So we'll still hit 2 million followers of Tribeca, which is a typical sophisticated New York film audience, which is great for our brand.
Yeah.
But my point is, I built enough trust and brand equity to be able to go to the celebrity and do that. And when people consistently see that, I chose the hardest name to brand. It's not an English word. I knew the challenges going into it, but and my favorite, which was not something I monetized or that, but when I look back of all the, as a kid that grew up in New York and loved hip hop, I got a text from Swiss Beatz. One time he invited me to the studio, Jay-Z sitting there and he's rapping, and he did Oat is the Living. And
I heard that.
And I was like, that's crazy. And then
they're featuring major hip hop songs.
So I was like, did that just happen? And then like years go by, and then I get a text, a DM from Swiss. He says, tonight at midnight, Oat is the Living. And I was like, what is that? Then it comes out on DMX's album with Nas. And that they use the Jay-Z verse. And then like 3 months later, they get nominated for a best rap song. And I was like, that's crazy that like my dream, if I could, hey, and it's not something I'm on. So I just thought it was like, if I could get a reference from anyone, and I would see how you'd rapped about Frank Mueller back in the day.
You'd
rap about Richard Mille, about that. And I said, look, as a luxury positioning, I don't know how you get in someone's rap song, but especially Jay-Z or, on DMX's album and stuff. And I was like, when that whole thing happened, I was like, wow. I mean, it was midnight, we at 12:01. I said, I can't believe Jay-Z just said our brand name, and he said it right. And this is crazy. I just said, this is, So I worked knowing the challenges of how hard that would be. And then I felt rewarded when it became a part of hip hop history, So I was like, something I was internally pleased. I was like, I'd never looked at it as a monetization or anything like that, but Jay is Jay,
it's a goated surreal moment. It's like, it's cool. It's like, all right, I built something that's synonymous with greatness. I think that seems to be like a driving motivation for you, right? It's this relentless commitment to excellence, right? And if you can do that and be that and align yourself with people, like that's what I think too, that I'm pulling away from your, from our conversation, is like, you had a very clear core value there. We were like, we're building this company as an ode to greatness, right? We're going to honor greats and we're going to be great and partner with the greatest brands. And it's like this greatness DNA. And I think people get inspired by that, right? Greatness inspires greatness. But I think you were able to really tap into that. And I think very few can do that.
Thank you. And that's technically ode is the highest. And, always saying praise to the highest, as well as just living in the, the best form that you can. And from how you're with your family, your friends, your business, and cutting out the weak stuff, and just, as I say, like the relentless pursuit of excellence. If you can consistently just do that.
How have you approached your personal growth, right? Because I have this belief that like you just don't exceed your level of personal growth, right? Like you have to keep raising your internal ceiling to achieve more material success and beyond. Were you getting all of your information from mentors, from people you were observing in these meetings? Were you a big reader? Like, were there any like key personal development, you know, book seminars you went through that really were big catalysts for you?
I will say the foundation from my parents, just coming from a traditional Indian family and being very close and having those sort of values instilled early, I feel that that coupled with the immigration process of understanding the American dream, and when you come here and you see a shopping mall or you see things that you've never seen,
yeah,
it gives you a wide range at an early age.
Yeah.
So I feel like inherently was thrown in when you're like, wow, I could come here and I could actually get one of these, or I could get in one of these cars, I could do that.
Yeah.
And then I would say on a technical side, I started listening to Tony Robbins, and I saw he did the neuro associations of how you could, you know, align your mind with certain types of thinkings, yep, and stuff. And I started applying simple things like that and, you know, learning more about visualization and trying to figure out how to, you know, see what I needed to get done. And
yeah,
so I feel like that also intertwines with the Hindu and with the Indian culture. You know, visualization is a big thing, and just, yeah, kind of like that. So I feel like my DNA kind of led to that, and my parents built the foundation of respecting the American dream, the, mm-hmm, the relentless pursuit of that as well. And then you kind of learn. I remember just even going to bookstores and going to the business side, reading table of contents and trying to even pick up, hey, in 30 minutes I have here, 20 minutes,
yeah,
let me just skim the top, and doing that. Yep. So always being hungry to learn. I feel like, you know, that's something you could teach yourself. I mean, I feel it was in the Indian culture and that, but I feel like I speak to people and I try to push them and say, hey, like, you want to be hungry. You don't want to be complacent.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, you like, you know, and I had said, like, you should be inspired by this. Like, you know, yeah, that I understand in the community nowadays between social media and how much time's wasted and what people's values are, there's a lot of people off track. So
100%. And the visualization piece, I think, is so critical. Like, I have, at least at this point, I believe like the physical follows the spiritual. If you can get clear about what you want and you can embrace the emotions of it in advance and be grateful for it and work your ass off, it has to manifest in physical form. But I think those practices for me have been like sacred over the last 6 years. And like everything that I have now today has already been achieved in my mind hundreds of times. And then eventually like, oh, it's actually here now. Like, did you have any specific like meditation or visualization practices you adhered to? Or is it just,
you know, I was listening to this thing back in the day. I think it was Jim Fanning. He was talking about how Michael Jordan would walk around campus and close his eyes and try to memorize where he was going and practice visualization. And there was, yeah, something about how he didn't make it to varsity until like the senior year or something like that. And I was like, wow, you can actually sit there. And there were exercises he was teaching about even sitting in the room and recreating the room, and these are like push-ups for your brains and stuff like that. So I was listening and learning and saying, oh, wow, Michael Jordan's walking around with his eyes closed around campus, figuring out how to get from place and visualizing things. So I would use sort of little hacks and tricks that I picked up, mm-hmm, from people along the way.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes more and more natural to, you know.
Yeah, you can start getting clear pictures. Yeah. If everyone listening and you could give them one habit that you could just automatically install in everybody listening right now, what is a key habit that you think has just been super high ROI for you in life that you would love to install into people's minds?
Well, I would say, and it turns back to the gratitude, but another layer of just positivity, because I see people now battling with so many things, from people, you know, between depression or between looking at this or that. I feel that you do have the power in your mind by pushing positivity and gratitude and really shifting your trajectory and your energy and what's happening around you with the right sort of intent and, you know, really the right types of focus. And as I said, like, I've found my life enhancing and changing the more base of gratitude and happiness and positivity. And I know our business could do more by doing negative things. But I decided to stay away from that because I was around when TMZ was starting and I saw you could do this and this one breaks up with this one and this one cheated on this one. And I just said, look, I'd rather highlight people's success and hopefully the smaller audience that reads our stuff makes a bigger impact in life than the rest of the people consuming negative garbage, you know, 80% of their day. So I feel if you could inherently change what you're putting in your system the same way you shouldn't be eating fast food, You shouldn't be watching, you know, divorce court all day and eating Cheetos. And that's not going to help you. You know, you might want to flip it to Bloomberg, or where you could learn something, what's going on in the world. And a lot of that stuff is still crazy too, but at least you're feeding yourself positivity or forward progress and growth.
It sounds straightforward, but it's actually contrarian, right? Like, that's not how the world operates, right?
Especially now.
Especially now.
How much content's being consumed and what type of content.
You're the opposite of clickbait. You're like, no, I'm going to highlight the best of the world. But I think the law of attraction works that way, right? You put out so much good content and great vibes and great value out in the atmosphere. It just comes back.
And other things have been fortunate to come our way. So I feel like as much of a life of positivity and gratitude you can live will take you a lot further than a lot of people realize.
I'm curious your take on this, man, because I think the purpose of life, you know, for me, excellence is a core value of mine. Like, I personally think cultivating your gifts in service to the world and building something remarkable is a great honor. Like, that's an absolute core value to my life. We all have material dreams. We all like, you know, nice stuff, luxury experiences. It's really cool. And you are a unique person to ask this because you're riding on the greatest jets, the biggest yachts with the biggest billionaires in the world. What have you learned about success and its correlation, you know, success, money, and its correlation to happiness? Like, these guys that you mentioned have yachts following their yachts and all these people, like, is that something people should even aspire towards? Are these people generally happier than most that you find? Or, like, what have you discovered about ultra wealthy and powerful people in that lifestyle and how that actually, like, corresponds to genuine happiness?
I'll tell you where I see the real happiness is in love and family in a lot of these situations. It simplifies when you have everything. You're not necessarily chasing the next plane. You're not chasing that. And we have a brand was called, I was kind of doing it on site, called Ultimate Luxury. So whenever I would finish an interview, I say, what's your ultimate luxury? So we would sit with this billionaires like related group or Rick Ross, right? So Rick Ross, for example, said my ultimate, and everything I realized, everyone's answer had one commonality. Time came down to it, right? So time is the ultimate luxury, but time of my family on that jet to Santorini is what he was saying, right? So I said, okay.
He wanted both. He was like, I want time with my family, but it's got to be on a jet to Santorini.
Yeah, so he was, okay. I said, and then I went sit with the related group and he said, look, this time I have to work with my son's building a multi-generational business. And so I found that time is the ultimate luxury, right? And when you're at a certain level of success, you have more control of your time.
Right.
Right. So, and then you could layer in the toys, the assets and that. But fundamentally, it comes down to controlling your time and then how you spend that time.
Yeah.
And the happiest I found is people that have built a beautiful family where they could share all that greatness and hardships that they went through beautiful experiences where you're not locked by someone else's time or schedule.
I read this really interesting idea called the ego tax, and it talks about, like, you could build a $20 million business. You might make, you know, $4 or $5 million take home, and then you have all the time and you're stress free, right? You have this great business.
Yeah.
Or you could build a $200 million business, but it sucks up a lot of your time. It comes with tenfold stress. And if you end up choosing the second option, like, you're paying an ego tax to some extent, right? Because you're giving up your freedom. You're giving up your security. You're giving up what truly matters to you, just pursuing higher numbers to fulfill some sort of narrative in your head, right? And I think about that sometimes. I'm like, am I paying an ego tax, you know?
Well, you know, as it comes back to, like, as you continue scaling and doing that, you can make a bigger impact on humanity the more resources you have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
you become comfortable in another area when you're like, I have a gentleman that was making $2 million an hour, $5 billion a year. And when we go out, he wouldn't order a bottle of water because he's like, I, you know, and he just felt it was wasting money. And I said, that's crazy. But he's the most generous guy. And he built a pharma distribution company, privately held, doing $5 billion a year. And then I was like, and all I watch him do is give away his billions now. And he's literally the most simple guy.
I think that's a really rewarding way to live life. You know, you grind for it, you get it, but giving it away.
And now that's his whole thing. He's on Milken's, you know, program, playing this, that. They're going, and how could we impact? And, you know, he never really took vacations. That he said, I just worked and built this $5 billion business.
Yeah.
My dad was doing $1 million a year. I'm doing $5 billion a year. And I became very close to him and was trying to study his mind. And he didn't even know how to take a vacation. You'd say, hey, find me a jet, some friends, and let's go try this place called Ibiza. And I said, oh, and he said, let's go do this. And he was like, he's like, I'm not comfortable really doing this. I'd rather just give, you know, $20 million to the Make-A-Wish today. And he was just happy giving. So I feel
so
like,
good, yeah.
You know, that scale, sometimes a headache's worth it. If you could change generations, you know, or even your generation.
You're sacrificing because, you know, like you have the ability to do it. But if you can live it back, like my ultimate dream is to be a dream Santa Claus. To have so many resources and powerful friends that we can go tackle world problems and just make dreams come true. I think that's like the highest expression of how you could live a life, right? But you have to earn that. That's a very privileged place to be where you literally, you have so much abundance where you can just go, whether it's at a shopping store, whether you're building a school somewhere, whether you're building a university, whatever it may be, but you can just change lives everywhere you walk. Right.
Yeah, my friend Stuart Rohr, the guy I was referencing, he said, hey, you know what? I can obviously go buy a plane right now, but tonight we're going to give $10 million to the Make-A-Wish to do the single largest wish grant at that time.
Incredible.
And so we went and, you know, I was like, wow, that's, and he's like, and he wears like regular, like a, he goes to the South Beach tourist store, buys a t-shirt, and that's what he wears out. He doesn't have like a jacket. You know, I bought him like his first blazer. It was crazy. So it was like amazing to see. So I feel like sometimes those types of headaches are worth it when you can impact.
Has your idea of success changed at all in the last 10 years?
I would say in the element of chasing numbers and so forth, I do love the concept of a happy life. And as you said, like it's not too crazy. We're not just a fireman all day putting out fires. Yeah. And that's why balancing, taking some time for yourself, vacations, things like that. At certain points, I was like, who does this and that? And then our business became vacations. I mean, fundamentally, it's work at the Monaco F1 or Cannes.
Yeah, you find a way to blend vacation and work. So, huh?
And that's what I said, you know what? If you can just be happy, you know, in such a blessed world for so many people and in such a sad place for so many people, right? So I'm like, the happiness is, you know, for me, just being able to spend time with my dad and like, we're going to do a boys trip and go somewhere. And I get to showcase the benefits of my work. As I know, if I go to certain venues, I get my dad just like would be wowed by the treatment we get and stuff. And this thing coming with a sort of immigrant dream and being able to experience things at that level, you know, I feel is like, it's just, it's an amazing, to me, that's the ultimate wealth, right? Like, beautiful times with the family and things like that. So
that's incredible. I could not agree more on that. Before I ask my last question, where can our audience find you online?
My first name on Instagram is just @KAMAL. And our company, Hote Living, HAUTELIVING, showcases a lot of our work and the fun parts of the business.
It's you got to follow the page. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Thank you, man.
Last question for you. I'm curious. You're living the American dream right now. You've built a lot right now. Like you've got so many businesses going on. But I'm curious for you, what is the end goal? Like at the end of the day, what's the legacy you want people to remember you for?
So for me, the oat living led to oat giving, which where a lot of the stuff we're leveraging not only our personal resources financially, but tapping into brands, tapping into ways to build longer term with other organizations such as the Make-A-Wish and so forth. So I feel that if we can create a product, and even with our media company, my goal is to take it where my niece, my other people in our family that are into this, to continue the Good News Network and continue spreading positivity. And I learned from a great entrepreneur here, J.R. Ridinger. He said, look, you could build a business and own it that's positive cash flow, a successful business. And he has shop.com and he had numerous offers to buy and sell. He's like, I'm making historic amounts. He was making over 50, 70 million a year for himself and didn't need to exit and said, you know, I really love my business. My wife and I are in it on a daily basis. They, you know, they live it, they work it, and they do that. So he told me it's a great discovery in life when you can know that you don't have to be chased by, you know, hedge funds, this, that, like reporting. So he built a beautiful business like that. And he said it's also a great discovery in life as you make money to live in other cities and markets and just say, hey, I want to be here in this season and I want to travel here in this season with my family. So I feel kind of blending all of those together.
Just living a holistically successful life, sharing those experiences.
Yeah.
with your family and putting out a net positive impact in the world.
100%.
Dude, I love it. This has been actually really illuminating for me because I've obviously heard amazing things about you from a ton of mutual friends here in Miami, but cool to see how you built this thing. How you came from, you know, just the immigrant American dream story is always freaking inspiring, but you really strike me as someone who's like deeply grateful and real. Like you're in an industry, right, where there's a lot of flash and fakeness and you can feel it. Miami, you know, has a slight rep for it, but like, I appreciate how genuine and humble you are. I think it's clear why you've built what you've done and why you have the reputation you do. And it's inspiring, man. So hopefully people listen to this and are inspired to go for their dreams.
And even with you, because what you've done and what the wave of young, talented, tech-driven entrepreneurs has brought to Miami, because typically our city was known as a hospitality city. And there were some real estate developers that made money. Everyone else was a realtor or promoter in nightlife. And that's what a transient town. And then people like yourself, Howard Lerman, Brent Saunders, these great sort of entrepreneurs. And you obviously even at a younger age. So it's, you know, even more kudos to you in doing that, brought a layer of knowledge to Miami that was missing, that I always knew. My parents and my family chose the best city in the world because of wherever I traveled. But it really became the greatest city when the mind and the power of the brains of the people that came here and your representation of the American dream and this piece of beautiful masterpiece that you have here is a great testament to your work and more influence of people like yourself. I hope these messages lead to more people like you coming to Miami and changing what we have going on here.
That's the mic drop, guys. Move to Miami. Your dreams will happen here.
Yeah. I love it, man. Real estate. HL real estate.
And then come buy a spot from Kamal. Yeah. Awesome, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, my man.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the World Class Podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe across all our platforms. Hit that notification bell so you can get updates on our new episodes. And we'll see you next week.